Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine. Hope you enjoyed the Raucous Caucus. We still got 2 hours of radio right here. We Act Radio, 1480 AM. This is Mark Levine, as I said. For those of you who don't know who I am, I'm a former congressional attorney. I've been a talk radio host for 10 years now. I had the privilege of seeing how things happen in Congress, how laws are passed, saw the good, the bad, and the ugly, and I come on the radio to give you the inside scoop. If you want to call in and comment on anything, just dial in, 202-889-9797. I want to talk about what's going on at the post office. Now, here we have the post office trying to do the right thing and Congress not letting them do the right thing. You may have heard that the post office is planning to stop delivery on Saturdays. Now, the reason they're doing that is because the post office loses approximately $15 billion a year. And you might say, well, they're just not running it very efficiently, and it's because everybody uses email and the web these days. And it's certainly true that online delivery of messages is gone way up, and snail mail delivery has gone way down. That's true. But that is not the reason for the distress at the post office. The post office is in distress because it was required by the Republican Congress in 2006 to put aside for their employees' health care separately from other federal employees. See, all federal employees have benefit programs under basically a universal health care system, the Federal Employees Benefit Health System. Many of you who work in the Washington area know all about it because you're federal employees. And that worked just fine, and the post office was well in the black, and they made money, and everything was fine for a number of years. And then in 2006, Republican Congress, I guess, trying to further separate the post office, which is really pretty much a separate private business now, mostly, from the federal government, said that they had to not only provide for their workers' health care, but they had to fund 75 years' worth of health care in 10 years, which doesn't make any sense, and which no private or public entity has to do. Well, that entirely artificial requirement by Congress is the sole reason why the post office is running out of money. And so instead of fixing that requirement, the post office, which can't fix that because of the laws of Congress, it would have to change, has decided to end Saturday delivery. Now, ironically, this is something that Congress itself is against. Congress has said that they want to have six-day delivery, but when the government expires at the end of this month, and assuming that Congress can't get its act together and reappropriate funds because, let's face it, with the upcoming sequester and all the fights between Democrats and Republicans, it seems unlikely that the Congress is ever going to get its act together. The post office, the postmaster general, has seen this hole, this loophole, and said, all right, well, I'm going to take this opportunity to end Saturday delivery, which will save about $1 or $2 billion of the $15 billion deficit. So it'll only fix 10%. And some 25,000-30,000 workers are going to be fired. So we're firing these people who are doing a good job and making money, and we're doing it to save 10% when the real trick is just to let Congress let the post office work like any other private or public entity. If it's public, it should rejoin the Federal Employees Benefit Health System. If it's private, it should be able to fund its health care any way it wants. And let's face it, a lot of businesses don't fund health care for their employees. But for a 75-year plan, they should do it over 75 years and not over 10 years. There's a further impediment to the post office, and that is that they're not allowed to increase the cost of their stamps, except by inflation. You may wonder why it still only costs 45 cents to send a letter from Miami, Florida, to the Aleutian Islands in Alaska, from San Diego to Portland, Maine. Anywhere in the country, you can get a letter for the same price. And actually, I like that aspect of the post office. I like the idea that for 45 cents, you can get something across the country. And I'll tell you something, I'd be willing to pay a dollar for that. I think most Americans would. Imagine you go to Federal Express and you try to ship a package across the country, they're going to charge you $20, $25 to do that. Not 44 cents, not a couple quarters, and you're done, and you're across the U.S. Well, if the post office were allowed to raise its prices to be more competitive with private industry, then they also would not have a deficit problem. So for all that people are blaming the post office, its problems are not caused by the post office. It's not the post office's fault. They didn't cause their problems. It's Congress that caused their problems by forcing them to have this 75-year pension in 10 years, by not allowing them to raise their prices. And the answer is not ending Saturday delivery, which, by the way, has existed since the founding of the post office in the late 18th century. The answer is to, if you want the post office to be private, if you want the post office to pay for its health care, then let them do that, like any private industry, and let them raise stamps prices, like any private industry. But don't tell them, oh, you're bad, you can't make a profit because the things we're forcing you to do, well, you just can't handle them. That makes sense, doesn't it? And I also want to move on and talk about Chris Dorner as well, because another, well, crazy person, as I'm sure you know now, has been, burned to death, I guess. Apparently he shot himself before his house caught on fire. But Chris Dorner, the Los Angeles Police Department officer who barricaded himself in a cabin near Big Bear Lake in California, and after shooting a couple innocent people and then shooting some officers as well, I think Chris Dorner has shown that you can never beat the U.S. government with your guns, no matter how powerful they are, and that maybe the answer has to be in democracy, in a republic, not in using guns to fight your government. The story of Chris Dorner is a tragic one. It's one where you have a police officer who filed a complaint against his fellow police officers, and his complaint, it's hard to know whether it was justified or not. I haven't read the complaint, but whatever it is, it was a complaint for racism and corruption in the LAPD. He lost his complaint, but the really tragic thing is that he decided that instead of going through the proper sources, I guess, he went ahead and decided to take it out on his own and got a little crazy. Okay, very crazy. He went and he shot the daughter of the man who had defended him at the police department. Kind of a weird crime when you think about it, that he shot his daughter and her fiance, and then he held up in the woods with some very powerful weaponry and used that to hold the police at bay for quite a while until they shot tear gas in his home, which caught on fire. And, that's the end of Chris Dorner. To me, the lessons of Chris Dorner are that really the danger of these very powerful weapons and that they pose, that here is you have an ex-cop, and maybe when someone's no longer a cop, maybe they should take their guns away, because these are the kind of weaponry that should only be in the hands of responsible police officers and members of the military. If you want to call in, it's 202-889-9797. I have a frequent caller, Michael from the Bronx, on the line. Hey, Michael, how are you?
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Trying to stay warm. It's kind of cold here in New York City.
Is it snowing over there?
No. We had a blizzard. It's a little over 8 inches. I mean, it was a lot of snow, but I guess that's nothing compared to what upstate New York,
right,
especially Connecticut and East Long Island suffered. But we've been there and done that, so my hearts go out to them.
Okay, so you wanted to talk about, was it Chris Dorner or just guns in general?
Well, it's kind of a combination of both. And what happened with Chris Dorner is, to me, it renews the call for gun control, at the need also for the limitation of magazine rounds,
mm-hmm,
and especially the universal background checks.
Yeah.
Now, I know that you've probably seen on your fan page the argument back and forth that I have engaged with some of the staunch pro-gun supporters.
Yeah, I've seen them. By the way, folks, you want to join in those discussions, you can go to the Facebook. Many of you are members of Facebook. You can just go to the Mark Levine fan page, and you can feel free to add your 2 cents to those discussions. I have a strangely large number of conservative people who frequent that page and argue with the likes of Michael. So if you want to join in on his side, please, please do so. I'm sure Michael would appreciate it. But go ahead. So what's your point that you're trying to make?
You know, what gets me is that there were some conservatives, I won't mention their names, but of course their posts are evident right there, people can read them, that they said they're not against, they say that they certainly support the idea that the mentally disabled should not have a gun, and that those who have criminal violent past should not have a gun. All right, but I don't know why they oppose the background checks and the limited use of ammunition, but particularly
back it up. So the background checks, this is really, what I think is it's a matter of simple cognitive dissonance. In other words, believing you believe something and believing you believe something else and not looking at the illogic between them. So I hear conservatives, too, say, well, we don't oppose background checks because they know that, there are background checks for licensed gun dealers and that the National Rifle Association itself back 10 years ago did not oppose background checks. But then when you point out, well, but there aren't background checks for gun shows, there aren't background checks for private sales, 40% of guns are sold without background checks, then they say, well, enforce the laws we have and don't change new laws. They switch their arguments. They actually they kind of ignore what they just said and then say something else, even though they know it's illogical. And I think they're just lying to themselves. I don't know how else to put it.
I don't know what to say. Lying to themselves, or they just cannot make up their minds. I mean, let's face it, you don't need cosmetics to make up your mind. You're either going one way or you're going the other. And then stop giving the double talk and the double standards. And I strongly urge these people to stop listening to the likes of Fox propaganda. I can't even call them news. It's propaganda. It's a lot of falsehoods. It's a lot of garbage talk of them saying Obama's coming to get your guns. I kept arguing with them saying, no, that is a falsehood, because if Obama was coming to get your guns, it would have been done already.
Well,
there wouldn't have been there would have been no talk of trying to find reform. And I kept also stating what President Obama stated in his State of the Union, that the victims deserve a voice and a vote. And you know, he named the victims one by one by one, and showing that this is a systemic pattern that's going on, and the people that are encouraging this gun violence, whether intentional or unintentional, is the right-wing rhetoric that's pro-guns and saying this lie of Obama's coming to get your guns. I mean,
and they profit from it. I mean, these are gun manufacturers who support the NRA, and let's face it, the more people that are dead, the more people that are shot by guns, the more people buy guns, and then they profit from it. I mean, frankly, I think they actually like the legislation, because whenever Obama, even if there's a threat to end some of these high-capacity magazines, people go out and buy them. And it's a very, very limited number of people. I'll be very clear here. Only 20% of Americans even own a gun. And of those, a quarter of them are hunters. So that's only 5% of America. You know, all we talk about, all the glorious hunting tradition of the United States, that's only 1 in 20, 5% of Americans. And of the other 15%, at least 10%, so half of them have one gun for self-defense. It's like a handgun. They don't own semi-automatics. They don't own high-capacity magazines. The people that own the stuff that that you and I and President Obama want to ban are probably 1% of the American population. It's a tiny, tiny percentage, and they are paranoid, and they have a lot of guns, and they actually think the government is out to get them. And I think what they're going to learn is, if the government is out to get you, look at Chris Dorner, they will get you. You can't stop the government with, I don't care what weapons you have, they have tanks, they have planes, they have drones, they have nuclear weapons. So you're not going to fight the U.S. government, and if you're not fighting the U.S. government, you don't need these very powerful weapons, because all you need for self-defense is a good shotgun. All you need for hunting is a good hunting rifle. You don't need an AR-15.
Absolutely. I also argue that if you are a registered gun owner, a licensed gun owner, and you're complying with the safety and the laws of the United States, you don't have anything to worry
about.
That's
right.
However, if you are not complying with the laws, if you are engaging in criminal acts, and or if you do not have a license to actually have a gun, now you got something to worry about.
That's right.
And then, yeah, the government, as you said, will come after you. But with these conservatives saying legitimate, like one conservative saying legitimate gun owners, I had to stress there's a difference between legitimate gun owner and legal gun owner. A legitimate gun owner may not be licensed, and thus he may be in deep, deep trouble.
Yeah, I mean,
people got to remember that part. They're so adamant of saying the Second Amendment gives us a right to bear arms, to have guns, and blah, blah, blah. But as you said before, how quick they forget to read the important line that says a well-trained militia, which means that people have to be well-trained, has to be an organized effort.
Like the National Guard. Exactly. A well-regulated militia necessary to the security of a free state. Like the National Guards that no one's prohibiting. The thing I think that is that whenever you press these gun nuts, and I'm going to call them nuts, and when I say nuts, I don't mean the legitimate gun owners. I mean those those who actually believe there should be no background checks, the ones who believe that crazy, insane people, violent felons and terrorists should have the right to have these guns. If you believe that, then I think you are crazy and insane, and you probably shouldn't have a gun yourself. Because,
like Wayne LaPierre.
Well, you know, you find these same people talking about terrorist watch lists and saying we need to beef up security and we need to watch out every time someone who's a Muslim gets on a plane, right? I mean, they're really harsh about racial profiling when it comes to flying on planes. We have these terrorist watch lists, but these same people are saying, well, we don't want Osama bin Laden to fly on our planes, but we're just fine with him owning a semi-automatic military assault rifle. And it just doesn't make any sense. And I think they know their arguments don't make any sense. When I've pressed these people, they admit, yeah, well, I like guns because it makes me feel powerful and I like to shoot things and it's a lot of fun. And I say to them, when I really press them on my show, I say to them, well, what if we had shooting ranges and you didn't bring your own gun? You came in, you paid a fee, they gave you a gun, you got to shoot at things, and then you gave the gun back when you left the shooting range. And of course, if you didn't, they would call 911 and, you know, you'd be arrested. And most of them are okay with that. They just want to shoot things. And the other thing I remind them is if you play paintball, you can shoot live people and no one dies. And then you can actually enjoy all your military fantasies in a way that nobody gets hurt, seriously hurt. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was about to say that. It's, you know, really absolutely insane what you exactly would say about these, you know, gun nuts, that they don't want universal background checks, and then even to the point of encouraging our young ones, teaching them to have a gun and to use a firearm and fire at them, like with that stupid app game, after they got to saying the guns ain't the problems, it's a violent video game. And then you keep talking out of both ends and making a mockery out of the whole situation, and they don't even listen to the opposition. I stated also on your fan page that it's absurd that we are spending and wasting so much time unnecessarily going back and forth on one amendment, in which the amendment states clear, well-entrained militia. I also argued that the gun rights are not so much of a right if you got to go through licensing and paying the fees to get a gun, just like you have to do the same with a driver's license. And most importantly, Mark, we got 25 or 26 other amendments. Should they take a back seat to this so-called gun nut clause that people want to drape as the Second Amendment?
I think we respect all the amendments to the Constitution.
Equally,
but even just the Second Amendment alone, I have no problem with, because the Second Amendment says, as you pointed out, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It's the only amendment to the Constitution that gives a reason. Every other amendment says you have the right to remain silent. You have the right to be secure in your person's papers and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures. You have the right to freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom to petition your government. This is the only one that conditions a freedom based on a reason. And it says, to the extent that we need a well-regulated militia to secure a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms should not be infringed. Because in the late 1700s, the militia was the army. The founders did not believe in a standing army. As I've pointed out, even the clause in the Constitution that allows for an army, it says specifically that you have to reauthorize your army every 2 years. The founders did not believe in a standing army. They believed the people in well-regulated militias, in state and local militias and posses would defend the country. Now, we are a different country now. And I, frankly, the Second Amendment, to the extent that we have a standing army, it's really kind of defunct anyway, because, maybe they're arguing they don't want a standing army, and that's a different argument, and they can take that up with the people who support the military-industrial complex. Yeah. But the Second Amendment is for well-regulated militias, and that's the way for more than 200 years the courts held that's the only thing the Second Amendment does. There wasn't a single gun regulation anywhere in the entire United States of America that was ever struck down as unconstitutional, from 1791, when the Second Amendment was ratified, all the way up till 2008. For 217 years, no one challenged the fact that this merely protected the right of people to serve in a well-regulated militia. And that's not unusual. We have a Third Amendment to the Constitution that has never been cited. That's the one about you can't quarter soldiers in people's homes. It has never once been cited. You go to your law books, you look it up. It's never been used because apparently the government has never tried to quarter soldiers in people's homes. So the fact that the amendment wasn't used very much doesn't mean it didn't exist. It did exist, just like the Third Amendment exists. It's just that nobody tried to stop well-regulated militias from having guns. And that's why it wasn't challenged until 2008, when Justice Scalia and four others, in a hotly contested opinion that four other justices completely thought was ridiculous, five justices of the Supreme Court in the Heller decision decided for the first time to ignore what the founders wrote about well-regulated militia, to pretend that those words didn't exist, to really disrespect the founders of the Constitution, and to say that those things, those words don't matter, and the only words that matter are the words they want to read. That, I think, is, as a strict constructionist myself and a constitutional lawyer, I think that had no basis in the Constitution. I believe that every word of the Constitution should be respected. And if you don't like it, amend it. If you don't like the Second Amendment, amend the Second Amendment and get rid of the part about regulated militia. But that is the Constitution. If you don't like it, go live in another country or amend our Constitution.
You know what's so funny about all this, Mark? And this goes also to the conservatives' claim that we progressives or liberals, whatever you want to call it, are adoring President Obama as a king and all that. And I kept saying that is not the case.
That's
he is
silly.
A president, but he is an absolute rational president and a constitutional scholar at that.
But I've attacked him. I mean, like, for example, on the drone memos, I firmly believe that he had to disclose them to Congress, and he did, and I'm proud of the fact that he did. But before he did, I said President Obama needed to disclose these memos just like George Bush needed to. I don't think Obama's perfect or a king.
No, of course not. But that's their talking point. But here's where they need to look at themselves in the mirror, and that is with the discussion of gun control. You know, when at the State of the Union, when you have all these victims of gun violence, and they were all mentioned, but most importantly, a few days beforehand at that congressional hearing, you had Gabrielle Giffords and Mark Kelly, I think is his last name, testify at Congress. Now, he gave a very compelling testimony saying that both he and Gabby are gun owners, licensed, registered.
Right.
They comply with the laws. They respect the Second Amendment, but they also stated the need for gun regulation, that there are those who have no business holding a firearms and the need for universal background checks. Likewise, there is a YouTube video with another registered legal licensed gun owner, and he says that the NRA does not speak for him, and he opposes what Wayne LaPierre is saying. They have all these gun owners that are repeating the same concerns as you and I and every rational person has, saying you need of universal background checks. These far right wing conservatives don't want to listen to what the opposition is saying, but they're so quick to wrap their arms around Wayne LaPierre and, to me, treating him like some kind of king, and he's opposing universal background checks, and even going as far as saying that this discussion shouldn't be going on, period. I mean, that's an important point, is that
you find that 90% of licensed registered gun owners support background checks. 80% of even National Rifle Association members support licensed background checks. So Wayne LaPierre doesn't represent the right wing. He doesn't represent gun owners. He doesn't even represent his own membership. 4 out of 5 of his members think he's wrong. So it sounds
absolutely
to me like the National Rifle Association needs to get rid of Wayne LaPierre because they need to follow the wishes of their own members. And one more thing, you mentioned, Michael, violent video games. I've looked at studies on this, and studies show that actually the Dutch and the Koreans play far more video games than we do. We play a lot. We're at the edge of the scale. But the people of the Netherlands and the people of South Korea actually play far more video games than even American kids do, and their rates of gun violence are way, way lower than ours, which shows you it's because in the Netherlands and in Korea they have restrictive gun laws,
and
it's got nothing whatsoever to do with violent video games. I just want to make that clear.
Yeah, here, and you know, before I go, I would caution everyone that just as we kept saying that the Republican Party of today is not the same as it was years ago, and some people recognizing that this is not the Republican Party that I grew up with, I'm starting to see that the same way with the NRA. I'm willing to believe that they were a responsible, if you want to use the term, lobbying group back then, but today's with Wayne LaPierre, it's totally different. I mean, I even posted on your page that I'm seeing him as some kind of a sinister, maybe a fearmonger, maybe even a terrorist for that matter, not the kind of terrorist that would turn around and hijack planes or anything like that, but if you're turning around and advocating for every single person, regardless of age, regardless of beliefs, every person should have a gun, and then now you got guns flying around the city, the communities, and no ounce of accountability for safety. I mean, what does that say? You're absolutely advocating for destruction, yeah, and regardless of human life.
Well, he's
and these
getting
pro-lifers,
paid. Yeah.
And these pro-lifers who want to keep saying, we have to bring babies into this world, abortion, it has to be outlawed. Guess what? The guns are killing the pregnant people,
sure,
and others before babies are born.
32,000 Americans are killed by a gun every year, and about 40% of those are just murder. They're homicides. More than 10,000 homicides a year. Most of the rest of them are suicides. Either way, if you have a gun in the home, you are 43 times more likely to have that gun used against you or a member of your family than to actually use the gun in self-defense. I know people say they want guns for self-defense. I'm not advocating getting rid of guns for self-defense, basic guns, things like handguns and rifles and shotguns. But even so, think again, 43 times more likely that that gun will be used against you or a member of your family than actually used to stop an intruder. And when you think about that, you might want to go out and get some mace. Thanks for your call, Michael. I appreciate it.
Yep, there has to be more safety and accountability.
Absolutely.
I mean, when you hear enough stories of an accidental shooting or the gun just going off after hitting the ground, that should say something.
A lot of it's accidents. That's absolutely right. Thanks for your call, Michael. I always appreciate when you call in. When we come back,
all the best.
Thanks, Michael. When we come back, what I want to do is go and play some of the footage that I played when I hosted the Leslie Marshall Show. Because this footage is when Chris Dorner was holed up. We didn't know what was going to happen. And you'll hear I predicted a fiery end. I predicted that he would go down. It wasn't that hard to predict. Anytime you take on the U.S. military, you're going to go down. Whatever complaint you have, legitimate or not, you don't try to take on the U.S. government with guns. And that should let people know, this whole idea, we need our guns unless the government becomes a tyrant. This isn't Syria. This isn't Nazi Germany. And you can't fight the government with guns when they have tanks and planes. You want to fight the government in a constitutional republic? Elect leaders that control the government. That's how we do it here in America. I'm going to play some of those clips for you when we come back. This is Mark Levine. This is The Inside Scoop. If you want to dial in, it's 202-889-9797, 202-889-9797, or you can call toll-free 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.